I'm joined by the Swedish writer Aaron Lund, who's just done a study on Syrian jihadism in the uprising. Aaron, the report starts with a question: how important are extremist religious factions within the uprising? What's the answer to that question?
Well, I think they're still of limited importance, but it's growing, and they do punch above their weight in some ways, and they are disproportionately influential in some ways. One is that the jihadi groups, they receive most of the foreign fighters, the volunteers who come to Syria to fight in the rebellion, and they're also responsible for most of the major bombings inside cities and the suicide bombings and things like this, which cause damage to the regime in another way than most of the insurgent groups in Syria do. Most of them are fighting in the countryside. They're using small arms and such. So the jihadi groups, they do have an influence that way.
The report says that the influence is rapidly growing. What's the evidence for that?
Well, you see more of them. You see, on the one hand, you see more of these groups, and they are becoming bigger. They're pulling off bigger operations, and for example, groups that started off just attacking forces within direct fire, bombing and placing roadside bombs and things like this, they're now starting to get active in guerrilla warfare in the way that other rebel groups have been doing for some time. They're attacking outposts and military bases in some regions. And you see, just a larger visibility for these groups, and they're starting to show up in the mainstream media reports from Syria as well. They're visible on the battlefield in a whole other way than they were before.
Is there a danger that they're just shouting louder and that they're...
Yeah, they are shouting louder. That's part of it, of course. I mean, and they're very focused on, most of these groups are very focused on communication and you know, marketing their own efforts. They're recording videos of their attacks, and they're spreading the word about their, you know, their jihad on various internet forums, and they have they're very media conscious in a way that perhaps most of the rebels are not, and that does give them that makes them appear more important than they are. But on the other hand, this revolution is to some extent a question of appearances, and the way the revolution will be perceived, and the way various rebel groups will be, you know, people view the rebel groups. No one has a real good grasp of who is the bigger group, who is the more important, who has the most men, and they all claim to have, you know, thousands of men. If you see a lot of videos, and you hear about a lot of attacks, and you see a lot of reported bombings and stuff like that, that will give them an outsized importance politically as well.
You've documented, you described 12 of these groups. How important are they? How marginal are they?
Well, I mean, there are any number of groups that you could characterize as Islamist or jihadi in some way, but perhaps most of them are just very small networks in a single village or something like that. And it's very difficult to pinpoint who is a jihadi, who is not, who is an Islamist, who is not, and even to draw the line between the different groups, because some of them made faction within a larger alliance and things like this. But I picked out 12 groups, and some of these are definitely what you would call Salafi jihadi groups, you know, hardcore ideological al-Qaeda-style groups, whether or not they are actually linked to al-Qaeda. And of these groups, I would say there are, you know, a handful that are really important. They're not among the largest rebel groups in Syria, but, well, some of them are, perhaps. But they're not, you know, they're not the mainstream of the rebellion. But they're important in the fringes, and they are important in some cases, very important locally in their own region. And among these groups, you have, for example, I think the largest groups in Syria, which you could characterize as jihadi or at least very, you know, strictly Islamist, is called Kata'il Ahrar al-Sham, or the Ahrar al-Sham Brigades, which means something like the Free People of the Levant Brigade. Sort of tough to translate. And that's a network of Islamist militias, which is active mostly in the Idlib province, stretching into Hama and Aleppo, and they have groups, you know, all over, but most of them are there in Idlib. They come off as pretty much, you know, standard issue jihadis. If you look at the groups in the Iraq War, they have the same kind of rhetoric. It's a lot of Islamist rhetoric mixed up with a little bit of Syrian nationalism, and they do suicide bombings and they do all of that. And then you have a more an even stricter and more orthodox jihadi group called Jabhat al-Nusra, which means the support front. And that's, they're very secretive and people don't really know a lot about them, but they would declare their existence in January 2012. And they're mostly viewed as what is probably an offshoot from the Islamic State of the Islamic State of Iraq, which is the local Al Qaeda affiliate in Iraq. So the Jabhat al-Nusra is probably composed of Syrians and other people from the Levant, you know, Jordanians and Lebanese and Palestinians, who went to Iraq, fought there, and got organized, and then got Iraqi backing to go back to Syria and start this group when the revolution started in Syria. And they're really orthodox and strict in kind of in terms of ideology, and they are they've been embraced by much of the jihadi community online and these big jihadi web forums, which serve as an arena for communication among these jihadi groups. And they use suicide bombings. They use just generally bombings and attacks of that kind against government forces. They record everything on video and they release statements where they explain their actions in religious terms and so on. So they're very typically Al-Qaeda style jihadis. But there are some questions about this group as well, whether it might be infiltrated or might be, you know, exploited by the government somehow. I'm not sure that's true, but there are a lot of questions about it.
As your report says, that a lot of the exiled opposition have blamed the regime for a lot of those suicide attacks. Mm. Do you dismiss that as a sort of conspiracy theory or what?
Well, I think in most cases it is conspiracy theory, and it's a way of trying to deflect blame and trying to, you know, maintain the moral purity of the rebellion somehow. And most people who say this, of course, they are not jihadis, and they're outraged and they're appalled by these attacks and by this, you know, sectarian, violent, heinous rhetoric of these groups. So they want to blame it on someone else. They want to blame it on the government. And that's quite understandable, but it's, I think in most cases it is conspiracy theory, and these groups are real. There were Syrian Salafis and jihadis before the uprising, and there are even more of them now. That's a fact we have to deal with. But on the other hand, of course, the Syrian government is not, you know, morally beyond using groups like this and staging operations and killing civilians. Of course, it's not. It isn't, you know. I don't think it's beyond them to have done this in some isolated cases or trying to stage some, you know, false flag operations in here and there, you know. But in general, I think the exile opposition, the Syrian National Council, and the Free Syrian Army, when they talk about how the regime must be behind these acts, they have no evidence, and it's generally just conspiracy theory.
Have the Western media and Western governments indeed been sort of somehow kind of hoodwinked by exiled opposition into thinking that the uprising is a much more sort of multi-religious movement than reality?
I think so, yeah, to some extent. And, you know, the Syrian uprising started off as a political uprising against the dictatorship of Bashar al-Assad. And the opposition, the Syrian opposition, has always contained people from all the religions, all, you know, political forces. And particularly in the exile opposition, you have a lot of former communists and former, you know, liberals and so on who've been in the West for some time, and they fled during the 80s or 70s and so on. So perhaps the exile opposition and, so to speak, the political opposition is composed. The composition of these groups is different from the mainstream of the uprising inside Syria today, because the uprising started off and it spread very quickly through through, you could say, this semi-Arab countryside, and it spread to all kinds of groups. And you shouldn't, it's not on a religious, it's not a religious uprising, but these areas were where it spread first. And the more militarized and the more violent and bitter the conflict has become, the more you see that the religious affiliations start to matter. So if you look at the uprising today, the armed uprising, the groups composing the armed uprising, from the Free Syrian Army on the more moderate fringe to the Jabhat al-Nusra on the most extremist end, they're basically all Sunni Arab. Whether they are Islamist or not, they're all Sunni Arab in terms of their family background. The Syrian Free Syrian Army leadership is 100% Syrian, Sunni Arab, for example. And this has created it's feeding into the Islamist narrative of the conflict. You have this political conflict which is slowly turning sectarian, with, you know, aided by the regime which stages massacres and all kinds of things to provoke people into sectarian retaliation and so on. But for whatever reason, it's turning sectarian, and then you have the Islamists and the jihadis who are the forces best equipped to fight a war like that. When you have the jihadis who say that this is a religious war, we are Sunnis, we will fight for the Sunnis, we will fight against the Shia and the Alawites and the Druze and the secularists and so on, that's the narrative that will work in a sectarian war where the uprising is, the armed uprising is completely dominated by Sunni Muslims. Of course, they're not the leadership of the revolution. They're not the people who started the revolution. They are not the main force in the revolution, but they are able to exploit this sectarian dynamic very effectively.
Doesn't a report like this sort of play into that narrative that this is extremely sectarian and underplays the unpopularity of the Assad regime just among ordinary people?
Yeah, I mean, it could do that, I'm sure. But I just think that one has to, you know, describe what's going on in Syria, and, you know, honestly. And I've been writing about Syria for many years, and I've been hoping for a liberalization and democratization of Syria, and I'm a supporter of the Syrian opposition, and it's painful to see how this revolution is slowly, but it seems to me, certainly turning into a sectarian war. And, of course, if you still have the traditional opposition, you still have the activists on the street who are not fighting for an Islamic State, who are not fighting because they hate Alawites or whatever it might be. And what, you know, I'd like to draw attention to them as well, but and when I wrote this report, I point out early on in the report that this is not a report about the Syrian uprising, this is not a report about the Syrian armed movement or the Free Syrian Army or anything like that. But it is a report about something that exists in Syria, which is starting to shape the way the Syrian war is being fought, and I think you can't look away from that either.
Do you have any reason to be optimistic about what's going to happen?
Not right now, I think. No. I think the Syrian conflict is, you know, if the current dynamics aren't, you know, interrupted somehow, if maybe, you know, there could be a peace agreement, Bashar al-Assad could be assassinated or escape or resign, or you could have a foreign intervention, could be for good or for bad, but, you know, something dramatic might happen to change the way the war is being fought. You saw the bombing in Damascus some time ago where you had several major security officials killed, for example. There could be an event like that, just the dynamic in favor of the opposition, in favor of the regime, we don't know. But if nothing like that happens and it just goes on like it has done for a year and a half now, then I'm afraid I think Syria will continue to disintegrate and the polarization, the sectarian polarization between religious groups and between various regions and ethnicities in Syria will continue to increase, and I see very little hope for a peaceful resolution in that case.
Okay, Aaron. Thank you very much. Thanks.
Thank you.